Hello, I'm Mark Steiner. Welcome back. It's good to have you with us here today. And we have another report we're going to talk about today. This one I think that people should take with a great deal more seriousness. No expressions meant towards my colleagues at National Public Radio and Harvard School of Public Health and the rest. But for a long time, people anecdotally have been talking about the problem of arrests when it comes to the African-American community. That we've seen the stats that people are arrested in greater numbers from communities of color than white communities. And we always said for similar crimes. People said that more people, as many whites as blacks, if not more whites than blacks, smoke marijuana, but most people arrested for marijuana are black. Well, it's always been anecdotal until now. The American Civil Liberties Union has come out with a report, The War on Marijuana in Black and White, Billions of Dollars Wasted in Racially Biased Arrests. And the stats just blew me away in terms of the numbers and how badly Baltimore and Maryland fared in this report. And we're going to talk about this more with officials and bring these guests back who are with us in the studio now. But Sonia Kumar is staff attorney at the ACLU of Maryland. I had our hands in this report as well. Sonia, always great to see you.
Thank you.
Welcome. Good to have. Let me get that mic a little closer to you.
Thank you.
It's my fault. I should have pulled it there closer. And retired Major Neil Franklin, executive director of Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, LEAP, a 33-year police veteran who led multi-jurisdictional anti-narcotics task forces for the Maryland State Police and ran training for the Maryland Police Department, the Baltimore Police Department. So he's been involved in this for a long time. And soon to be joined by Carl Stokes and Dr. Lester Spence is on. It looks like he called him for the last hour, and we welcome him into this conversation as well. But Sonia, tell us about this report, first of all.
Sure. So I think that there are sort of three sets of really significant findings in the report. One relate to sort of the numbers and rates of marijuana arrests overall, both nationally and I think especially relevant for Maryland, is that Maryland is now fourth highest in the country in our arrest rate for marijuana possession. So one out of every 250 people overall in Maryland was arrested for marijuana in 2010. It's equally alarming that the numbers have jumped in between 2001 and 2010. In Maryland specifically, marijuana possession arrests increased by 34%, which is just sort of an extraordinary increase, given that the population growth didn't even come close to matching that. So there are findings relating to that. The second set of findings are, of course, what you sort of led with, which are certainly extremely significant from our perspective, which are the extraordinary race disparities in arrests across the country and in Maryland. And actually, in a couple of weeks, the ACLU of Maryland will release a report that is much more detailed in terms of analyzing Maryland counties. But I can tell you that the race disparities exist in every county in Maryland. It doesn't matter if we're talking about Baltimore City, if we're talking about a small county on the Eastern Shore. It doesn't matter if we're talking about the D.C. suburbs or Southern Maryland. The race disparities are extraordinary. And so, I mentioned earlier that the overall arrest rate was one out of 250 for Marylanders. For African Americans, it's one out of 127. For whites, it's one out of 363. And the disparities, and that's the average for the state. In Baltimore City, the white arrest rate is, I want to have that number here in front of me, it's 2.9 per 1,000 people, but 16 blacks per 1,000, which works out to one out of 61 black people in Baltimore City. And then the last findings are related to the costs, the extraordinary fiscal and human costs of enforcing marijuana laws in this way.
Well, and one of the things that shocked me here, and we'll bring Neil Franklin into this, is that, give me an example of this study, folks, and join us here at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. Log on to our Facebook pages or tweet us at Mark Steiner. I promise I will jump right in and get you on the air as soon as I see your names pop up. But this is 92% of marijuana possession arrests in Baltimore City were of African Americans. 92%. 92% of Baltimoreans are not black.
Yes.
And that's a shocking stat. But that even in places like Homing and Lawrence, Pennsylvania, and Kenton County, New York, where African Americans make up less than 5% of the population, they are 10 to 11 times more likely to be arrested for possession than white people. That is madness. So Neil Franklin, what is going on? You're a police officer for 33 years. What is the mindset? What's the direction? What's underlying this from your perspective as a retired police, not just officer, but you were a major.
Right.
You were one of the men who ran the show.
Yeah. I don't know if that's good or bad, Mark. Thank you for that. There are a number of things that play into this, but basically it is drug policy in this country gone wrong in a big way. And, you know, I was talking earlier, whether this is by design, and many people, we all have our opinions on that, the drug policy in this country, or whether it's by accident, the fact is that our policing practices across this country are racist now in design and in practice and how we go about it. You know, one of the most significant factors regarding this is that, you know, blacks and whites do typically sell drugs or distribute drugs and possess drugs in different manners, in different ways. Blacks tend to do it more openly in their neighborhoods. And, you know, there's also that factor of police and violent crime. You know, unfortunately, we get a lot of calls from, you know, the black community about drug dealers on corners and the activity in the streets. We get a lot of calls from citizens and so on in fairness of the police. So we do respond to that. But the main issue really goes back to a previous show that you've had. We're here to talk about racial profiling in general and how we, you know, the citizens, whether black, white, Latino, whatever, we all tend to view, you know, we got this image in our minds of who uses and deals drugs. We have this image of a black person in our mind. And, you know, that's right. Something that we need to change. You know, marijuana is just one of the marijuana is the main reason for the majority of searches of people across this country by far. And unfortunately, most of those searches happen to be of blacks. It's just so easy to use marijuana as a reason to search someone, and then that typically leads to an arrest. So.
And again, I'll run these stats. And Councilman Stokes is with us. Carl, welcome to have you with us.
I'm glad to be here. Hi, Mark.
And I want to go to our first caller here, Marion. So hold on, I'm going to come right to your call. I'll just read one more stat here. So I want you to get a sense. This report, we're going to go back to this in the next coming weeks and invite on people from the police commission, the attorney general's office, to talk about what we can do to change this.
And that's who you need on police leadership, because they're the ones asking for the numbers and the corner clearing and all the...
And I also want to bring up a little bit, you know, if you look at the news in this morning's Sun paper, the Garrow County Sheriff said he will not enforce laws around certain firearms things because he doesn't believe it fits into what he believes philosophically. That's what he said in Garrow County. Well, if a Garrow County Sheriff can do that kind of right-wing taking care of, you know, folks with guns, then why can't the Baltimore City Police say, well, we're just not going to arrest people for marijuana because we don't think it's right? So we'll get into that in a little bit. But this stat here, then we'll go to the phones. The counties that arrested the highest number of blacks for marijuana possession in 2010 were, first, Cook County, Illinois. Second, Brooklyn in New York. Third, the Bronx. Fourth, Fulton, Georgia, which includes Atlanta. Fifth, Baltimore. So
can I add one thing to that,
yeah.
Which is just that what was shocking to me was that the number of marijuana possession arrests in Baltimore City increased by 3,000, more than 3,000 between 2001 and 2010. There were 3,900 in 2001, 7,000 in 2010. And given sort of the range of issues facing Baltimore City, I think we really need to be asking ourselves why we're arresting so many people for that.
Before we turn to our council member who joined us, I see Lester's on the phone. Lester Spence, if he wants to join in. Lester, ask him if he wants to kind of join in.
Sure.
Let me go into our first caller. Marion in Baltimore County, you're on the air.
Hey, Mark, this is Lester.
Oh, hi, Lester. I'm sorry. Well, hold on a second, Lester. We're going to Marion in Baltimore County.
That's fine.
Go ahead. Marion, you're on the air.
Hello, Mark.
Yes.
Oh, hi. Yeah, listen, I just wanted to tell the panel about something that happened to me when I was a spectator in a courtroom in Anne Arundel County.
Sure.
About 7 years ago, a white defendant walked in and he had an attorney, and the charges were basically he had a minivan that was filled from top to bottom with marijuana, and he got to walk out on his own recognizance. The next defendant was a black guy who had the equivalent of about a teaspoon of marijuana, and they took him away in chains. They were going to give him 15 years. I was flabbergasted. So I just wanted you to hear that story. I saw this with my own two eyes.
No, I think that kind of story, Neil,
Blacks aren't only arrested at higher rates, as you're hearing today. we're also convicted at higher rates, and we get stiffer sentences than whites when it comes to all drug crimes, including marijuana.
Again, I'll throw this out to our stats, and then let Lester and Councilman Soaks jump in and then hear from Lester, that the counties with the highest black percentages of marijuana possession arrests, 2010 again. Pike, Alabama, Morgan, Alabama, Dallas, Alabama, St. Louis, Missouri, Hines, Missouri, Baltimore City.
Yeah.
I'm trying to know what is happening in our city. Why is this happening? Why is it so outrageous in our own community? You were going to say something, Councilman Stokes?
Yes, Mark. So yesterday, I'm on a bus, apropos to not anything special, except that I'm on this bus on the way to the White House with colleagues from the city council. And this report came across our email. And everybody on the bus said, what's the surprise here, guys? What's the shock? There is not. You know, zero tolerance against black people is no news, is it? It's certainly not in Baltimore with our last decade and a half history of zero tolerance and arresting black people just because they're black males particularly. So there's no news for most of us on this issue. It's almost like, I honestly, when I'm calling into you, Mark, I apologize. I don't know what the news is. That's what we do in this city. It's what we do in this country. It's not just marijuana, is it?
But Councilman, let me ask this question. Lester, I want you to jump in here. I really want to get this. Many callers calling in. I want to get to them here.
Yeah.
And so I promise I will. Cabral, Ernest, Willis, we're going to get to all your calls. So please don't hang up. But the question, Carl, is if we know that, then where's the political leadership to say something about it? Where are the people saying this should not be happening, that we have to change the laws, change the way we our arrest policies? Why isn't that happening if we all know this?
Mark, can I jump in now?
Yeah.
So real quick, I was calling about the last hour, so I want to make quick comments there.
But we want to focus this on marijuana if we could. I want to keep this focused on it.
Yeah, well, because they're both related. Right. So the biggest problem with the survey of last hour wasn't the sample size. Sample size was perfectly large.
Right.
The problem is that it's very difficult. There's this population of black people that are growing that you just don't sample because they're never going to be in the pool. And that's and those are people who have records and particularly black men. Right. So there was this huge gender gap between female and male respondents.
Okay.
So how does that lead to the marijuana thing? What we're talking about is not a black white issue. I mean, what it really is a black poor issue. And that's why we don't have the political muscle, because the black people who are caught up in this sort don't have power, not just in relation to whites, but they don't have power in relation to blacks in Baltimore. It's black poor people. It's a war against the black poor. And nobody wants to give that population political power, and they don't have the speech quite yet to take it.
So we have to take a very quick break. We can come back. We're going to go right to our other guests here to kind of let them jump in on this. And I'll throw you one little piece out as we go to break here for you to contemplate, that all the counties in Maryland, by the way, with racial disparities above national average, Baltimore City's up there. The other two are two that I would consider, and I know that some of the people will be upset with me in their counties, but I don't care, are two of the most racist counties in Maryland, which are Cecil and Garrett. So why is Baltimore in that mix? We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. We're here talking about the ACLU's report, The War on Marijuana in Black and White. We are joined by Sonia Kumar, who is one of the people who worked on this report. She's staff attorney at the ACLU of Maryland. This is a national ACLU report that looks at the entire country. Every state and every city county in America was looked at in this report. Reverend, retired Major Neil Franklin is with us.
That works, too.
Executive Director of Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, LEAP, a 33-year veteran. Police veteran who led multi-jurisdictional anti-narcotics task forces for the Maryland State Police and ran training for the Baltimore City Police. Carl Stokes, Baltimore City Councilman representing District 12, and you at 410-319-8888. I want to go right to the phones, but Sonia, would you please just say the two things you said during break to set some perspective here again?
The 98% of youth arrests in Baltimore City are black.
98%.
And you know.
98%.
Right, 98%. There's no, I mean, I don't know how close, if we want round up, that's 100%. I think out of 435 arrests, 9 were white kids.
I mean, so what I said when you said that was, and this is no aspersions on the schools I'm about to mention, because they're great schools. My daughter went to one of them. One of my daughters went to School for the Arts here in Baltimore. My other oldest daughter went to Friends School. But the amount of white kids in both those schools that smoke reefer, come on.
But, Mark, no one complains when a black kid is arrested. They have no political power,
exactly.
no advocates with power, no financial power. They have no voice. That's why.
And, Mark, Carl Stokes.
Yes, Carl, go ahead.
You know, Baltimore is one of the most racist cities ever.
Whoa.
Right now. Regardless of black leadership in politics or business or even the church, it doesn't matter. This is a southern hang-your-head Negro town. It's a handkerchief-head town, brother.
Ooh.
And you know it is. So I'm not making up stories here. I'm not trying to be dramatic. It's true. We don't care about black people, especially poor black people. And it's obvious. It's obvious. They just stole black people's poverty to get a $52 million tax credit down at the harbor. This is like nonsense. And so this is a city that doesn't care about black children per education, doesn't care about black children per recreation. So I can go on. And there are billion-dollar projects in this town being built right now in EBDI, in the harbor, and black people are standing around on the corner watching other people come into their town and work at those jobs.
Let me open the phone to you, if I might. We'll come right back to our guest, 410-319-8888. Let us go to Cabral. You're on the air.
Yes.
Cabral, welcome. You're on the air.
Oh, thank you, sir.
Cabral, would you turn down your radio, please, so we can...
Yeah, I sure did. Sure did.
Hey, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes, good day. Good day. I read an article in the Boston Globe about five to 6 years ago. I'm originally from there. I'm a Morgan ad as well, but... So back and forth, they were talking about decriminalizing marijuana from an ounce or less. Now, with that, you know, that had a lot of people in my neighborhood, you know, like, cool, you know, that's great. But as it's been implemented, what the new thing, as I call back up to talk to my friends, they're saying, like, well, now they're getting brothers for possession now. So you can't, even if you have an ounce or less, they're going to say that you have an intent to distribute. Now, but going back to the law enforcement representative's editorial he had in the Boston Globe, he put, I'll never forget this, he put that in proportion to our population, since it's like 14% of African Americans, he said we're only doing 14% of the drugs. So why are we, you know, 96% of the people getting, you know, getting arrested, you know, and being tried and being found guilty? So wanted to put that out there for you guys.
Thank you so much, Neil.
Well, again, it's a leadership issue. You know, we require police to go out here and bring in the numbers to make the arrest. One other thing I was talking about earlier, it's so easy to go out and make the arrest and violate the rights of certain people, blacks. Years ago, we used to follow every case and look at conviction rates. We don't do that anymore in law enforcement. You know, we can make an arrest and care less about what happens down the road and in the courts. And I think that's important because so many of these arrests never make it to conviction because they lack the probable cause that is needed for such a conviction. As a matter of fact, many of them lack the probable cause for an arrest in the first place. So it's a leadership issue, whether it's the police commissioner or the mayor. And I'll talk later, a little bit later, about some of the things that we can do immediately at the law enforcement level and at the mayor's level.
That's what we need to get to. And one of the things you said, Sonia, that the numbers were high in Montgomery County as well, where 17% of the people are African American.
17% are Latino.
Or Latino, I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm. So one of the points I wanted to make was about the race disparities are actually undercounted in these numbers because the FBI's UCR data categorizes Latino arrests as white arrests. So actually, these are extraordinarily conservative rates that we're seeing. And so especially in jurisdictions that have higher Latino populations or growth in their Latino populations, we know from, you know, deeper looks at the data that those disparities are already undercounted. But I think the broader point that we were making is that we cannot just say that this is a Baltimore City problem. This is a problem in every county, every part of Maryland. And I want to make one additional point about the point that the major just made, which is that, the ACLU has had this longstanding case involving racial profiling by Maryland State Police. And we have access to information about all these searches over this like 13-year period. And we did a query for the number of searches that were based on an officer saying they detected the odor of marijuana. And what we found was it was like a third of all the searches. But what was even more remarkable was that 70% of the time they didn't find anything.
Right. And I tell you, there's a story that I'm sure that my producer's mommy telling. He told a story where he was stopped, had his car searched. They made him search his car because they smelled marijuana. He doesn't smoke marijuana. He's not a drug user of any kind. And it was because he was smoking a cigar.
Yeah.
You can't tell the difference between a cigar smell and a...
one additional point about that is that actually the hit rates for the police officers was different for whites and blacks. And so they were better at smelling marijuana in white people's cars than they were in black people's cars, right? 37% of the time in white people's cars, they actually found something. It was only true 24% of the time in black people's cars and 9% in Latinos' cars. So the notion that they're actually sort of detecting marijuana in those situations is certainly, I think, suspect in light of that information.
Let's go back to the phones and get and come right back to our guests. Let us talk to Willis in Baltimore. You're on the air. Hi, Willis. You're on the air. Welcome.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
I'd like to start by recommending the work of Sharshi McIntyre, and particularly her book, Criminalizing a Race. Basically, what I learned from looking at her work and research is that from the beginning of the penitentiary system, the national and local policy in this country has been to arrest and remove off the streets as many American Africans as possible, even on a cyclical basis. And during the time when slavery was still in effect, this policy was directed only towards the population of free blacks. After Emancipation Proclamation, it became a general mandate to arrest and incarcerate as large a number as institutions could possibly handle. And right from the beginning of the penitentiary system, the representational numbers of American Africans incarcerated were more than 10 times the percentage of that same population on the streets. And so that type of disparity has existed before there was any prison industrial complex.
Right.
Yeah.
It was simply a policy of social control that has been enforced nationally and locally at the smallest, even village levels. So the information that comes out in this report, this recent report, it simply supports the fact that this is something that's it's not new. It looks like it's new, perhaps.
But you're saying, so...
It started with the founding of this country.
Well,
it began with the 13 colonies and continued after, quote-unquote, independence till today.
We've always had policies of social control in this country. You can go back as far as you want from slavery and forward. It's just that, you know, our drug policies has been one of the worst. And I mean, unfortunately, it's one that seems to be accepted by a larger population in this country.
The drug policy has been one of the most effective means of exercising this social control.
Right.
Prior to the flooding of the communities with drugs, all you had to get people on would be vagrancy. You looked as though you didn't have means of livelihood and so forth, and so you just swept up off the streets.
True. Michelle Alexander points it out in her book, The New Jim Crow.
Willis, appreciate the call, and I think you raised some important issues. I'll let Neil respond.
Yeah, and I want, I mean, that's obvious. I encourage everyone to read Michelle Alexander's book,
Absolutely.
The New Jim Crow, because
yeah.
she talks about that in there. And that's very important. That's the best way to get people that information about social control in this country. But I think it's important for people to know that, you know, we're talking about these numbers. It's also important for them to hear about the individuals in this city who have been affected. And this, I just want to talk briefly about this case, this young man. And I know he doesn't mind me giving his name out because he's been speaking about this in the public, Naeem Harrison. Who back in 2012, February of 2012, was stopped, arrested for marijuana possession, had his car seized, his tax return money that was in his pocket seized for a partial marijuana cigarette found on the floorboard of his car. But you got to hear this. It was at nighttime in February. He's traveling south on Asquith Street. Patrol units going north on Asquith Street, and they said that when they passed his vehicle, they could smell marijuana coming from his vehicle.
In the window, with the windows rolled up.
Right, and the window was broken on the driver's side, so we know it wasn't down. They turned on him, eventually found him. They lost sight of him, but they found his car again a few blocks away, stopped him, searched his car, arrested him, and now he's dealing with that arrest and conviction. Car being seized, his girlfriend had to go through hell and high water to get her car back, and I don't know if they ever got their money back or not from their tax return, but this is what's happening. This is an actual case, an example of what's going on in this city. I don't know how, I mean, I don't know of a dog who has nose keen enough to smell marijuana as a car is going by you with the windows rolled up late at night in February.
Before I go to the phones here, I want to ask all of you what you think has to happen. I think this report should make Baltimore and the nation, but since we're broadcasting out of Baltimore, we're going to broaden this discussion in the next week and ask my guests to come back with some other officials. How do we change this? What can make this end? Short of legalizing marijuana, which is going to be a state issue that people are going to have to wrestle with.
Well, I think that there's so many possibilities. I think, you know, first, we just need to deprioritize enforcement. Just as a matter of practice, I think that there's no reason why we can't make those choices. But I think that Major Franklin actually has some really excellent points about the sort of the other ways that we're incentivizing low level arrests that are sort of actually sort of, I think, very much more quickly are ways that we could address some of these issues.
Yeah, I mean, for one, we can move marijuana enforcement to the lowest level through our police department, okay? And then they can focus more on the violent crime that's occurring in the city, and we know we have plenty of that. The police can also help, along with the mayor's office, they can help change the national policy on marijuana enforcement in this country. We already see what's going on in Washington and Colorado, and law enforcement is behind that, and they're helping to move that policy. The mayor will be attending the conference of mayors that's coming up very soon, and there's a resolution that she can co-sponsor of other mayors, like the mayor of San Diego is one, and there's many more who are co-sponsoring this, which this resolution basically says to the federal government, allow the states and local government to decide how they should move forward with marijuana enforcement across the country and you know, let the feds back out of it. These are some of the things that can be done. But more importantly, there are some things done in law enforcement in Baltimore City right now. For instance, I'm sure they still have about 300 men and women focused on drug enforcement primarily in the city. You know, they can put them back in uniform. And they can take the money that they would be saving from equipment and cars and drug enforcement, probably somewhere around $250,000, not a year, more like a month, and put that in the rec centers. And
the problem is there's also a lack of political will. I'm just interrupting because when you said San Diego,
yeah.
So what I did was look at the report, and I hit San Diego.
Mm-hmm.
They rank just after Baltimore, in the counties with the highest number of marijuana possession rates.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So they may be talking about it, but they're not. They may be talking the talk, but they're not walking the walk.
Right.
When it comes to just
and you're right, and that's not, and this is just coming up now, where the mayor's deciding to move forward with this resolution along with other mayors. But when you look at what happened in Washington State in Seattle, immediately, even before the law became effective, they removed hundreds of marijuana arrests right from the books before they made it into the courtroom. And this is having a wonderful impact, a positive impact on black community in King County and in Washington State.
And one thing that I don't want to get lost in here is all of the stops and searches that happen that don't result in arrests. And I think that that is actually one of the most important ways that we can actually, you know, one thing is we need to be documenting stops. I think the stops that happen.
Right.
And we need to be documenting when nothing is found. And you know, I think supervisors need to be looking at the hit rates for their officers just as much as they're looking at their arrest rates. And if, are they seeing that there are people who are conducting lots of stops that are unjustified? And I think we...
Sonia, that's a great point, because we need to ask the question, are the stop tickets still being used here in the city? Every time there's a police encounter with our citizens, and I would guess that they're not being used the way they're supposed to be.
And as I said earlier with my producer, Bob Marvin Holmes, who just said that's what the officer said to him. He smelled weed.
Mm.
When there was no weed in the car at all.
Right.
Councilman Stokes?
Yes, well, I can't add anything to the conversation other than what Major Franklin, Colonel Franklin, has said. Really, I think we can move this to a lower level and really concentrate on the real issues that are plaguing our city in terms of the violent crimes. And so I concur totally with Neil Franklin here.
Let's go back to the phones. 410-319-8888. And Chris, you're on the air. Hi, Chris, you're on the air. Welcome.
Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
Mark, I've called you about this before, and the thing that doesn't get talked about and what law enforcement uses to their benefit to the detriment of people is the fact that when they treat people, especially people, once you get that first charge, which is what's needed to establish this record, and then the officer pulls up next to you, behind you again, and they see that you have a record, then all of a sudden that the burden to meet that standard of probable cause is lowered. They pull all the convicted felons. We haven't discussed felons' rights or people formerly incarcerated that have records, however it's being phrased now. There's no reason for people to, if someone does something at 18, then they get pulled over at 40, it's able to come up and then they're treated different. That's what has been used throughout since slavery, and that edict in the 15th Amendment that slavery is now illegal except under the guise of imprisonment, there's a direct connection. We have not, this has been going on for so long and nobody talks about it. We need a substantial conversation around the rights of formerly incarcerated people. Beyond parole and probation, after incarceration,
right.
Parole and probation, no one should still be punished. It's constitutionally illegal to have perpetual punishment. That's the purpose of sentencing guidelines. We need to have people stick to the sentencing guidelines, and then you can have, there's already increased penalty built in for subsequent offenders. So what is the need for all of the outside treatment of these people? And it's just the remnants of slavery.
Chris, thank you for your call. Appreciate you being part of this program. So let me get another caller in here, and I'm going to come back to my listeners' thoughts. Let's go to Max. You're on the air. Max, you're on the air. Welcome.
Oh, hello.
Hello.
So, yeah, basically, I just think that it's easy to forget what the police are supposed to do, which is they're supposed to be operating on behalf of the people, but I think instead we get used to them being this kind of buffer between us and things we don't want to deal with. And I just think it's important for people to organize as community members the people that the police are supposed to be representing and just become more critical of the police and their practices and to divest in them and not allow us to sort of embrace our comfort and sort of just not having to deal with all these different things and find community solutions to deal with our own problems and try to sort of just not count on the police for things, because I think that the police have shown that what they're really about is generating profits for the state and for prisons, and that's really at the expense of a lot of people's lives.
Max, appreciate the call. Sonia, you were about to say something.
Yeah, I want to respond that I think it's important to focus on the police role, absolutely. But I think I don't want to do that sort of and let us the rest of us off the hook because police do work for us and they respond to the incentives that we create and the resources we allocate. And one of the things that the major and I spoke about before was that, you know, he made the point about sort of calls for service coming from the Black community. I think how come when the Black community asks for better schools, more jobs, rec centers, we don't respond to that? But when they ask for police, we do. And I think that is on us. That's not just about what police are doing.
So let me ask you these two questions. I want to ask you a question, Sonia. I want to ask the Councilman Stokes question before we go back to the phones here.
Sure.
Sonia, you had another stat about the arrest in Baltimore. I think is important. About the numbers of, we already said that about the young people being arrested.
Yes.
This to me is something that, I mean, I'm almost speechless.
I know. You kind of feel like you should be able to,
Councilman Stokes, what stops you, and I'm not just throwing this at you, Carl, but that you are the city council, let this report has come out. And I think every city council person and everybody who runs our law enforcement agencies in the city, state's attorney, and the city police commissioner need to look at this report. And if they don't have time to read all 189 pages, have someone read it for them and pull out the most important facts. But why shouldn't there be a hearings to say, is something wrong and how do we change it?
Well, because I think, as I told you about riding the bus yesterday, nobody's shocked. No one thinks it's anything different than what we already know. We can hold another hearing. It doesn't change anything.
Well, can't people just jump up and say, even though they know that the state might oppose it and the federal government oppose it, we, the city council, are going to have a hearing and we're going to force change in policy, whether they like it or not?
No, 6 people can't do it. 5 people can't do it. 3 people. I'm not throwing away my responsibility of this. We will hold a hearing, except we don't have the political will of the majority of the African-American community, not the white community. We don't have the will of the African-American community, politically or business-wise or otherwise, in this town. When, I think it was Neil or maybe a caller, spoke to hopelessness of the poor Black community, that's exactly right. The poor Black community have very little voice in this town.
You know, the mayor should flip out over this report.
I would
think
so.
Should, and she does know about it because I sent it to her communications director yesterday. So I know he gave it to her. She should be, she should take some action on this from a leadership perspective, being the leader of this city, knowing about this report and what's in it and how it affects the citizens of this town. The mayor doesn't need any influence from anyone else to hop on this and do something about it.
And I want to just add one thing about sort of this notion that this is old news. I think first, it's not old news that that the race disparities are getting worse. I think that was one of the things that was really alarming to me, was that that the race disparities in arrests are getting worse. It's not that they're staying the same or they're bad and they've always been bad. It's that they're getting worse. And I don't know at which point, I mean, if our arrest rate for young people is 100% Black, do we say?
So we have to get a very brief break. We're going to let this segment bleed over a little bit in the next half hour. Can you all stay for a minute?
Sure.
We're going to come right back. And we are going to come back. Richard and David and Cheryl and Ernest, we're going to get your call too. I apologize, Ernest. The only reason I got to you first is because we do try to get some new voices on here as well. 410-319-8888. We'll come back to look at this War on Marijuana report and how it affects us here and everywhere else. Stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. I want to remind you the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by the Maryland Department of Housing and Community Development. Mortgage late? Don't wait. If you're struggling with your mortgage, the state of Maryland is offering housing counseling and legal assistance. Maryland's HOPE program can even help you understand the state's mediation law and the Attorney General's national foreclosure settlement. Don't wait. Get help today. More information at mdhope.org. or 877-462-7555. We're going to try to get a couple more callers in here as we talk with Sonia Kumar, staff attorney for the ACLU of Maryland, the ACLU nationally put out this report, The War on Marijuana in Black and White, Billions of Dollars Wasted on Racially Biased Arrests. And the report is especially damning to me, to many of us, about Baltimore City, about the state of Maryland. and the retired Major Neil Franklin, executive director of Law Enforcement Against Prohibition, and a 33-year police veteran who led multi-jurisdictional anti-narcotics task forces for the state police and ran Baltimore City City Police Department's training, and Carl Stokes, city councilman here in Baltimore City. And you, 410-319-8888. Cheryl, you're on the air. Hi, Cheryl, you're on the air.
City councilman here in Baltimore City.
Cheryl, can you turn down your radio, please? You're on the air.
Thank you. Hi, this is Kiana.
Okay. I had Cheryl on my screen, but Kiana, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Hi, thank you. I just wanted to share a quick story. I was sitting in my property in Baltimore City, and police parked on my block and ran up the street and put your hands up. I'm sitting there with a friend of mine. Okay, so we're wondering what's going on. Yeah, we got a call. They said some folks were out here smoking marijuana. They just looked at what I had on. They had a white shirt on and black pants. And yeah, put your hands up. I said, okay. Well, I don't know anybody around here smoking marijuana, but can you, you know, basically stop being so forcible with me? And the lady didn't appreciate that. So she promptly tased me, and then her partner tased me, and then, like, I lost, you know, control of my bowels. And this is right in front of my property. So I'm, you know, face down with stuff leaking and going around me, and, you know, she's still kind of roughing me up. So I'm like, seriously, do you even smell any marijuana? Do you see any marijuana? She goes in my house. She searches. She doesn't find anything. She lets my friend go out of the handcuffs that he was in. I guess he was being a little more cooperative than I was, when I was really just asking what is going on. And I asked her, well, can I get your name? Can I get your badge number? No. The sergeant came. They asked me, am I calm? I said, I've been calm. They took the cuffs off, and they walked away. I repeated, can I get a badge number? Can I get a name? I didn't get anything. So, yeah, they're not documenting.
That's horrible.
Anything. And yes, that was my story. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, Cheryl. Neil.
You know, I sure hope the commissioner is listening to this. Not that he doesn't know. I'm sure he knows that this happens every day in his city. And this isn't just one case. This happens in neighborhood after neighborhood after neighborhood. And, you know, it's a leadership issue. First line supervision. You know, she even mentions the sergeant arrives on the scene. A sergeant did not do what he or she was supposed to do on that scene, and that's a big problem. I mean, I got a little knot in my stomach hearing this, because I know that's not what policing is about, and that's not what it's supposed to be about in this country. And, you know, until we find a way to give the citizens the power, the political power that they need to make things happen, I don't know if it's going to change.
Well, you know, I'll tell you one thing, that this is philosophically speaking, but how I view kind of human behavior in some ways, that there is a very thin membrane between being the protector and being the persecutor.
Right.
But we have to we have to strengthen that membrane so the protector remains the protector and doesn't become the persecutor of the people of the city. That's because it can flip quickly. Whether you're in the army, in the middle of a war, or whether you're a police officer, whatever, that's just easy to do.
And when we treat our citizens like this in law enforcement, we'll never get to the bottom of solving violent crime, because we need their cooperation. We need their help in solving violent crime, crimes against our children, rapes, domestic violence, and so on.
So let's try to get one more caller in here, maybe two if we have time, but I don't think we'll have time for a lot, because we do have another segment coming up that we really want to get to as well, and people are really interested in this. We will try to put this back on next week. Okay, Bobby? We're going to try to put this on next week, ask our guests to come back, and try to bring on some officials from the city to have a conversation, and the state, to have a conversation about this, about what this report says to them. And remind everybody who's listening to this report, this show today, please go to steinershow.org, because sometime after 11 a.m., somewhere between 11 and noon, this report will be linked to on our website at steinershow.org. And I encourage you all to just look at the report. It'll be linked to on this show, on our show page, and we want you to check this out. Mike, you're on the air. Mike, you're there on the air. Turn your radio down, please.
Yes, hello.
Turn your radio down?
Yes, my radio is turned down.
Go ahead. Quick thought.
Basically, I just wanted to be quick and say, for one, I've been called a nigger twice since I've been living in the state of Maryland. I'm from the southeast. I've been in Baltimore 13 years, and I never was called that. But two, I don't see the black community as far as Baltimore. The black community in Baltimore doesn't stick together. That's just my 13-year observation of living in the city. There's no unity. And that's what it's going to take. We need an Occupy movement, like how they occupy Wall Street. We need to occupy every police department, head of the police department, in front of the police department, and protest all the injustice that police have caused in the history of America as far as a racist campaign by white supremacy. And, you know, we need to go and mass up 100, 200 people east, west Baltimore and go straight down to the police department and protest about the high percentage of African-American males being arrested in Baltimore City for petty crime. But at the same time, a lot of black people in Baltimore are pushing drugs. It's a lot of drugs in Baltimore City. So we don't have to unite as a people and come together for one and then organize and then go downtown and protest. And poor people, rich people, don't matter. Poor people can have a voice if you come in numbers and unite and, like, the black community comes together, middle class, high class, whatever class you are. If you're interested in trying to overthrow the racist policies that police have been doing in America, then we got to, first of all, Baltimore City, the black community has to unite. Thank you. And
thank you so much for your call. So, closing thoughts from our guests.
Well, right on the heels of this last caller here, we are organizing, the Institute of Black World 21st Century is organizing a march on Washington, D.C. on the 17th of this month regarding the war on drugs. And this report is so timely for this. And we can begin there. I can give out a phone number where people can call if they're interested in joining us as we go down to Washington, D.C. To talk about this issue on Capitol Hill. And so the number is 410-340-1887.
Sonia?
I think that this report really speaks to our addiction to criminalization and punishment as a way of solving social problems and concerns we have about social harms. I do want to encourage people to read the report, but also to look out for a forthcoming report from the ACLU of Maryland that lays this out in even greater detail for Maryland and Baltimore specifically.
We'll be talking about that. I think we need to have a real push on this. I think this is a very critical area. We're arresting just too many people. I'll leave with a thought from one of our listeners who wrote in, Patrick Kangraga from Pikesville. Kangraga from Pikesville said, "Our justice system cannot seem to shake the last vestiges of institutional racism, but I wonder if the issue is more about overall scapegoating. It would seem our arrests and convictions over minor drug-related issues like marijuana become a badge of honor for many. We must be doing well or better because of all the people in jail. Seems like all the public is often sedated by these statistics, and politicians get elected by using them as accolades and accomplishments. They effectively become a Band-Aid over a deeper wound, and the Band-Aid is probably laced with salt." Patrick, thanks for that thought. We're going to take a break and come back and talk about an incredible piece of music and how Morgan State University's wonderful group here is part of that, and Carmina Barona, which is just an amazing piece. You'll hear it, and we'll talk about it. Folks, thank you for being with us, and we'll come back to this.